This episode of Pomcast is sponsored by Blacker. Blacker Yarns produce a diverse range of breed-specific knitting and crochet yarn. With everything from Shetland and Blue-faced Leicester through to Wensleydale, Gotland and Manx, you'll be sure to find an unexpected treat. If you're thinking of embarking upon a breed-specific adventure, then head over to www.blackeryarns.co.uk. All Blacker's wares are spun and dyed on their mill in Cornwall using 100% British fibre and sustainable production methods. Thanks, Blacker. And welcome to Pomcast, the podcast brought to you by Pom Pom Quarterly. My name is Lydia Gluck, and I'm here as I am, well, at least once a month.
At least, if you're lucky.
If you're lucky, with the lovely Sophie Scott. How are you doing, Soph?
I'm good. Hi, how are you?
Yeah, not too bad. It's kind of cold now, eh?
Isn't it?
Yeah. We're in the knitting season.
All the better for those knitting woolly warmers.
Exactly. Yep, I washed all my hand-knit socks.
How did
ready
you?
For the season.
That's good. Pretty satisfying little thing.
Yeah, there we go. Okay, so
enough about laundry.
Yeah, enough about my daily life, which is less than glamorous, as you can tell. And a little bit more about podcast. So what have we got today for the people?
Well, we have our usual things. We have Tell and Tell, news and reviews, an interview with Diana Waller.
Oh, we love Diana.
She's a great, lovely lady.
Yeah, might remember her from, well, she's designed for Pom Pom a few times, but also we did a mini interview with her at Edinburgh.
In Edinburgh, yeah, in March. Edinburgh. We also have a segment that we have frequently, What Would Juju Do?, where you send in your queries to our craft agony aunt.
Indeed. And she has never failed us so far, and
true.
I doubt she ever will. She's a surefire winner, is our Juju.
Yeah.
And we always have, at the very end, or we almost always have, our top three.
We have a guest top threeers, so stay
tuned
for that.
Ooh, so exciting!
So, let's start with news. Why not? That makes sense.
Yes.
News, issue 19, for indeed, the podcast is linked to the magazine Pom Pom Quarterly.
Certainly is. Our most recent issue of the magazine, issue 19, came out right at the end of October, which is now was now a month ago.
Wow.
But so that's not necessarily news if you've been listening to these as they've come out. But what is news is that now you can get your digital copy of issue 19.
Explain that for the folks if they don't know.
So all the copies of the magazine come with a digital download code. And the digital version of the magazine is released a few weeks after the print version, just to make sure that everybody gets their print copy, all our subscribers get their print copies first, because although we love the digital, we are lovers of print at heart, but we know that not everybody feels like chopping down trees for their own personal pleasure, or some people perhaps don't live, you know, so close by and they would prefer a digital copy. And if you are one of those people, we love you too, and the digital copy is now available for your enjoyment.
Fantastic. Well, it's very up to date.
Yeah.
You've explained this before.
Infomercial style.
Yeah. So that's good. You can check that all out. Also, Pom Pom, we've been on the road. We've been busy. We've been places. Yeah.
We've been mega biz.
Yeah. So should we talk about Oslo first?
Indeedy. Yeah. So Sophie and I went to Oslo at the beginning of November.
Seems a long time ago now.
No, it does, doesn't it? We were there for Oslo Stryker Festival.
Yes, the knitting festival. So first time Pom-Pom's been there, second year for the festival.
Indeed. Well, what was your highlight, I suppose?
My highlight? I think meeting so many lovely people. It was such a good range. Obviously, there was a huge Scandi contingent, as one would expect. But just meeting so many, I'd say, vendors and other knitters. There's quite a few people who came to the stall who obviously didn't know Pom Pom. That was cool to meet them and say, hey, this is nice. And they're like, oh yeah, this is nice. And then others, or, you know, other Pom Cats, you know, people listen to the podcast. That was really cool.
It was really, really good. Yeah, we got to meet, we also got to meet some fellow podcasters, didn't we?
We did, yeah.
We met one of the Martas of Marta and Marta. I'm hoping I'm getting that right. And that was very exciting. And she was lovely. And I'm sure their podcast is lovely, but unfortunately, Sophie and I haven't quite mastered Norwegian.
Yeah, it's in Norwegian, but you know, if that's your gig, then check it out. Yeah,
yeah, definitely. So we hosted the quiz at the end of the show. Mm-hmm. That was very fun. And yeah, so I don't know. I think one of my highlights for me, meeting all the nice people. That was great. Seeing some yarn I hadn't seen before.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, we love the phrase woolly wool. Oh boy, do the Norwegians do woolly wool well.
They woolly well do. Yeah, so there was, I mean, we had our next door neighbour at the show was the lovely Anna Maltz, regular columnist in Pom Pom. And
who lives in London, who we haven't seen for like months and months. We're like, oh, finally, we can meet up with you in a different country.
Yeah, so it was excellent having having her next to us. We also had there was lots of new things hadn't seen before, but had heard of. So there was Nina Petrina, who dyes yarn so that you can knit a hat that looks like the Northern Lights.
Yes, very exciting.
So I got some of that yarn, and that was brought to our attention by Diana Waller, who you will hear more from later. And there was also Norna yarn. And Molla Mills, who's a Finnish crochet designer, who designs amazing, like, geometric...
graphic, crochet.
Kind of tapestry crochet, I think. Mm-hmm. She was very lovely and very glamorous.
Yes.
Incredibly glamorous. And there was Telespin yarn, which is a mohair blend. And that was the yarn that Diana had used for her design for the festival. And I also enjoyed some very nice notebooks.
Good.
Just to wrap up this section.
Well, it was good fun. Do you know what the low light was for me?
Yeah.
I got food poisoning.
Oh, so sad.
Just as a side note, I guess if people were expecting to see me more at the festival than they did, maybe they weren't. But I have to say that Lydia did an incredible job at the quiz. I'm told you did, because I couldn't be there.
I know. It was very sad that Sophie couldn't enjoy all of the days that we were in Norway.
But hey, that's not what Oslo was about, man. That was about the rules. And I had a good day doing that.
Good. Oh, and I went to the Norwegian Folk Museum, which was also a lot of fun.
You did. I looked at the
snowed!
Photos.
It snowed! It snowed!
Ultimate highlight. It was quite a bit of snow.
We were very excited. It wasn't loads of snow, but it was definitely...
more than I've seen this year in the UK.
That is for sure. And possibly more than I've seen in a while, because this winter just gone was warm.
Yeah.
I think, in a word. Yeah. So we were very excited that it snowed.
Yeah.
Norwegians slightly less excited than us. So yeah, so we really enjoyed Oslo. So thank you, of course, to Katie and Tona, who organized the whole event and made it a wonderful experience, I think, for everyone. And it was very exciting having it in a library. That was kind of cool and weird.
Yeah, because the library was actually open during part of the festival, so we'd be there talking about wool, selling magazines, and someone would be just like, excuse me, I just need to get that behind the shelf behind you. It was a really nice, amazing building, a great place to...
brilliant building.
You know, in the middle of the city to have such a lovely event.
Yeah, and it was really fun because we were sort of in like the music section and they had like a CD library.
Yeah.
And I kept noticing CDs that I really loved. Like they had Joan Baez's Gracias a la Vida, which is one of my favourite albums. And I just kept glancing down and being like, love that album.
Oh, and also there was the burlesque show, which we saw a little bit of on the Friday night, which was really fun. And also Tona was telling me about how they found her and saying how, because, you know, she's a woman who, you know, slightly more overweight than your classic burlesque dancer, and how a lot of her performances are about body positivity and sort of claiming who you are. And it's just, I don't know, just an extra detail that you wouldn't necessarily find at a knitting festival.
Yeah, definitely the first time I've seen burlesque at a knitting festival.
Yeah. Maybe the only time I've seen it, but who knows, this could start the trend.
Indeed. Yeah. So that was brilliant. And anyway, suffice to say that we had a lovely time and we really enjoyed meeting all of the Pom Cats, and we would love to be there again next year.
Yeah.
So here's to Norway.
In London, mm-hmm. at the same weekend, there was Yarnporium.
There was indeed, organised by the lovely organisers who have done yarn in the city for the past few years, 3 years perhaps. Mm-hmm. And neither Sophie nor I were actually there, but we have had reports back from Amy and Celia and Francesca, who were holding the Pom Pom Fort here in London. And we hear it was good. We also had signings from Stephen West,
ooh,
the neon dream that he is, and Justina Lukowska, who designed Talat, which was the lovely, slightly chunkier jumper from issue 19, mm-hmm. with lace kind of collar.
Collar, polonet,
and lovely little holes for thumb holes, love a thumb hole. So they joined the gals on the pom-pom stand. And there were all sorts of lovely vendors there also. And by all accounts, it was a wonderful weekend. But unfortunately, as me and Sophie were busy crunching snow in Norway, we have slightly less gossip. But we can say thank you to everybody who came to say hi, and we look forward to being there again next year, hopefully.
And if you think, well, I didn't get to go to Oslo and I didn't get to go to Yarnporium, you should come to the Pom Pom Christmas Party.
You certainly should. So it's now less than a month away. Hooray! We're already very excited. We're getting ready to deck the halls. So it's on the 16th of December. This time we have a beautiful location, an old Victorian warehouse down near London Bridge.
What a central location. How convenient for me and you. And people who, well, if you're visiting, London Bridge is a great station to pop in from.
It certainly is. And we will have the things that you've come to expect.
And know and love.
And know and love from a pom-pom Christmas party, which includes delicious food.
Yum.
Yum. Delicious yarn to buy.
Squish.
Squish, exactly. Delicious notions to also buy. And this time, we will have our first ever bring your own booze.
Exactly. I should have gotten like cheers rather than trying to make a drinking noise.
So we're going to provide, well, there'll be more about this online, but we're planning to provide you guys with mixers and glasses and fun cocktail paraphernalia. Mm-hmm. So even if you're just sipping a classic glass of wine, why not put a cocktail umbrella in it?
Even if you're just having a nice little orange juice, put a cocktail umbrella in it.
So we'll be all about the cocktail umbrellas. Hopefully they'll be Christmas themed. More on that later. Right. There'll also be live music, of course. And we'll be hanging out.
Yeah. What better place? I mean, to start the festive season, that would just go buy a ticket, guys. Just go online.
Yeah.
Find the link. Obviously, there's always the podcast notes mm-hmm. on the blog post. All the links are there.
Indeed. And so that's sponsored by the wonderful Fibre Company. And John Arbon and Fig Tree Yarn. So a big thank you to all those three.
So as the year comes to the end, we have the Christmas party. Did you know it was 1 year ago that Take Heart was released?
A whole year.
A whole year. Take heart and stock of that, lady.
That's my surprise whistle.
Yeah. So to celebrate this, we're having a little Take Heart knit along, which is launching... I'm in the past. Sorry, guys. We're recording this in the past, but you're listening in the future.
Woo!
It's launched, baby. And that's on Ravelry. So you can enter any project that you've, any Take Heart project
yes.
that you've already entered.
Mm-hmm.
And you can enter any new ones because you know the great thing about those Take Heart projects, they're great for the gifties.
They certainly are. So in case you're unfamiliar with Take Heart.
Ooh, but Take maybe Heart you're not.
Is, yeah. Yeah. Take Heart is the first book that we published as Pom Pom Press. So we've been doing the magazine now for, or, you know, by the time we published Take Heart, we've been doing the magazine for 3 years or so. We decided to start publishing books as well. And Take Heart was the first one we did. We worked with the wonderful designer Fiona Alice, and she created a collection of 10 accessories. And yeah, so as Sophie said, they're good for the gifts because they're all the little things, like the little mittens and the little hats.
You can do a Take Heart hat in 2 days.
As Sophie has proved. Yep, exactly. So, yeah, we want you to enter any projects, Take Heart projects.
And, of course, there'll be prizes.
Oh, boy, will there be prizes.
Check on the Ravelry forum for those. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, we'll have some other little fun bits coming through with Fiona soon.
Indeed. So speaking of makety things, as we do.
What are you makety now?
So I've been working on my cesium jumper, which is in one of our lovely sponsors, Yarn. So,
This links together so nicely.
So in issue 19, we had the cesium jumper, which is by the wonderful Sachiko Bergen. And I'm making it in the mountain mode, in the same yarn as it was as the sample was knit in. And I have managed to forget the name of the colour that I'm making it in, but it is pretty.
Must be pretty.
Must be pretty. It's a purpley, sort of pinky purpley maybe.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. The point is that I'm making it, and because I've managed to... this has been one of the projects that I want this jumper so much, and I just keep making mistakes, essentially. I didn't do my homework properly before I started. And I had the classic thing where the gauge that I got for my swatch was not the gauge that I got when I started actually knitting.
Yeah.
So
just nodding sagely. Just yes. Yep.
But I'm determined. I have got the front and the back finished, and I'm working on sleeves. Because I managed to kind of fiddle things around, change the size I would make so that my gauge would work. Because changing the needle size. Anyway, we've all been there.
Yep. Most of this was me being with you there on the plane in Oslo. Like, you were like looking at the book and then looking at your gauge and then looking at the book and like, ah!
So in case any of you are under the impression that, you know, that we're all knitters who just produce perfect things all the time.
That's not knitting though, man. You know.
No, it's true.
And that's not life.
No, it's true. You know, sometimes you just got to persevere with the thing. It was trickier than you thought it was going to be. But the point is that whilst making all these changes and having to start and restart and restart, I have learned many things. So that's my problem project. I think I already talked about this, though. I made a Caswell Bay hat mm-hmm. and some other Green Mountain yarn. But I also recently finished some Caswell Bay mitts in the Elizabeth Beverly cashmere.
Oh, which were in the suitcase also. You're like, oh yeah, these mittens I was knitting. I started picking them up and started knitting them again. Like,
I'd made one about 6 months ago and for some reason put it down. And 6 months later, the second was born.
There we go.
How about you?
Well, I've had a problem project. I decided that I wanted to do some lace. I very rarely do I do lace. Mm-hmm. And I've gone for the classic vintage Wick Lane shawl, which is in Pom Pom 1.
Whoa!
Yeah, I'm gradually working out what I'm going to do every single project from Pom Pom at one point. So it's like just a nice little kerchief kind of lacy thing. Mm-hmm. First problem, haven't done lace in so long that I just didn't read the chart. Just thought I knew what I was doing. Just kind of went. And then I was kind of...
All guns blazing.
It was a good project to take to Oslo because it was something to think about on the plane. Mm-hmm. Bad project to take to Oslo because doing lace while you have getting over food poisoning. Ooh. That's, I think... So anyway, I did the first repeat and then we were on the plane. And I was like, I've done it all wrong. And then put it away for a bit. Yeah, just completely misread the chart. I didn't like doing the nups. So I was like, I don't want to do nups. I'll just do pearls instead. Why not? I think Megan, our lovely friend and co-editor and designer of the pattern, I don't think she'd mind that I just disregarded a lot of what she'd spent writing. Sometimes that happens.
You just made it your own.
Made it my own. And now I'm kind of, rather than frog it, I've kind of fudged it into a new fun pattern. It's kind of working.
Oh, nice.
But I think it's the worst thing I've knitted. Like, as in technically...
The worst job that you've done.
The worst job I've done. In a long time, but I'm all right with it. I'm kind of rocking it.
There's something in the air right now. I feel like I keep starting projects that just aren't working the way I want to because I've had a history of being a little bit... Like, I do like to just go, oh, you made that in that yarn? I'm going to make it into something pretty different.
Yeah.
And in the past, it's worked out for me. But more recently, I think I'm having slightly less luck with it. Or maybe I'm just more aware of what I want the fabric to be like. Mm. So I don't know whether that's what's changed or whether I've just lost my beginner's knitting luck. I don't know. But the point is that it's still really fun.
Yes. Well, that's the main point. I love knitting it. And the colour I chose, I've gone for like an acid chartreuse green. Which is basically mainly for because I have a navy coat. And I was like, you know what I need? And I did the most impulsive buy of yarn. And I was just like, yes, I need this chartreuse green. You are mine now. I will make you into a shawl. And sometimes that's what's knitting about. You know, you've got to have the funds.
The funsies.
Funsies.
There we go. Okay. So now that we've told and told, should we do a little review?
Yeah.
Okay. So what have we got? I'm holding in my hands some lovely yarn.
Let's listen to it. Did you hear that? That's yarn.
That's the sound of some Green Mountain Spinnery Morit. So... This is a particularly special yarn for several reasons. So we've got the fingering weight. It's a single ply. Quite a good yardage, I would say.
What's that? 450? Yeah, imagine that.
Pretty good. So do you want to... You're good at describing colours. You can be on colour duty. I'm going to rustle our notes.
So this is undyed, which is one of the important things about this yarn. What would I call it? I'd say it's a warm brown. Mm-hmm. It's more on the yellowy tones.
Yeah.
It's not solid. You've got a soft heather within it. Not white, but sort of a creaminess to it. Not speckled, but there's a subtleness. Yes. I imagine when you've knit with this, you don't mm-hmm. get a matte, flat colour.
No.
There's definitely a texture, like an animal's fur, you know? It's not one colour.
Yes.
Well, indeed, this is an animal. I've just realised it's a stupid thing. It's a sheep. But thank goodness you said I was good at colour. No, what would I say this is? It's, I want to say like a nice stick or like a nice log brown. But you know, you get like a really nice stick. I mean,
like the kind that you bring home and put on your windowsill.
Yeah, like, well, I spend a lot of time hanging out with my dog, and I think sometimes like our minds meld. I'm like, oh yeah, it's a really, that's a really good stick.
Okay, so this is a stick that what's your dog's name again? Millie.
Millie.
That Millie would approve of.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, and shout out to Everly Foden's dog Lucy as well. I bet Lucy would like this.
Yeah, and you know Millie and Lucy, same breed, both Black Labradors.
Aww.
Yeah,
they need to get their own podcast, those two.
Oh my god.
Video cast. Anyway.
The WAG cast.
So, not only are we going to review this yarn, but we also have a giveaway for you guys.
Woohoo!
So you can win some for yourself. But here's a little more info. Just rustling my notes. So this yarn was created as a special limited edition yarn to celebrate the centennial of the carding machine that belongs to the Green Mountain Spinnery. So they describe it as a light and lofty single ply fingering weight. I think we can agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's made from very special, naturally Morit coloured merino sheep raised in Missouri. So it's very unusual, as I understand it, to get merino in this lovely brown colour, because normally it's bred out because people are more interested in having the white or the you know, the lighter the colour, the better, so that they can do the dyeing.
Mm-hmm.
So these natural colours are extremely unusual. So it's a really special yarn we got right here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and 450 yarns, which is not too bad. And there's even, you can learn about the flock that the yarn was created from. You can go to www.genopalette.com/grower. We'll put the link to that in our show notes because that's probably easier. Yeah, so if you head over to the blog, you can win yourself some of this lovely yarn.
That's three skeins, so that's enough.
Pretty
for
good going.
Enough for a party. All right, an interview. So, sometimes the linear format of time plays around with us. You interviewed Diana.
I did.
At Oslo Knitting Festival, which is what in previous podcasts we've told you. And that did happen, and many of you joined in and saw it.
And that was delightful. Thank you to everybody who came and knitted and laughed at my terrible jokes.
But we had a technical glitch, mm-hmm. and the recording was a bit 10,000 leagues under the sea.
Yes.
So we recorded another interview, or I recorded an interview with Diana, which is great because we both got to interview her in the end.
Yeah.
Which we did via Skype, so thanks Diana for doing that again with us.
Mm-hmm.
There is, you know, Skype disclaimer, it's a little bit of a echo sometimes, but you can definitely hear it, and what an interesting lady she is, so.
Yeah, so thanks again to Diana, and I'm looking forward to hearing your version of it.
Yeah. So, via the magic of Skype, we are joined by the wonderful knitting designer, Diana Waller. Hello, Diana. Can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Hello.
Hello. Welcome to the podcast. So, we saw you at Oslo and we caught up there, but we have to pretend that we haven't done that interview already, I guess.
Yeah.
But before that, we met up with you at Edinburgh Yarn Festival earlier this year in March. So, what have you been up to since then?
Knit-wise, I have been busy. So I had several pieces come out this fall for Quince and Company and their fall collections, which was really fun. I think I did, it's three patterns. It's sort of four pieces in all. It's two sweaters and a hat and mittens, and it's all stranded color work, which I love. So that was really cool. It's such a joy to work with Quince. And that was also my first time working with sample knitters. So I want to give a shout out to the wonderful sample knitters who made those pieces happen, because as you saw when you saw me in March, I was in a sling because I'd broken my shoulder.
Yeah.
And then I've been working on some self-published stuff as well. I think I actually mentioned some of that when I talked to you at Edinburgh Yarn Festival. But since I am also working on a master's degree, that stuff tends to get pushed back because there's no... I'm the one setting the deadlines, you know? So the self-published patterns get pushed back when I have patterns on for Quince or other third parties, or if I, you know, need to focus on school, whatever it is. So I'm still plugging away at that stuff. I do have stuff in the pipeline, but it's just a matter of when I can get it out.
Cool. Well, speaking of third parties and other people you're designing for, you designed a free pattern for Oslo Knitting Festival.
I did.
Some mittens called, I'm not going to pronounce it right, Rosenhofvotter?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Hanging out with you in Norway has paid off. My accent is getting better. So, could you tell us a little bit about your inspiration behind those patterns and how you came to work with the guys behind the festival?
Yeah. Well, I met Katie, who's one of the festival organizers, earlier this year. And when she was, you know, working on the magazine for this year's festival, she had mentioned that they wanted to put some patterns in. And so when she asked me if I would do a pattern, I was really excited. And she didn't specifically say to me or the other two designers that we should do something Norwegian themed or Oslo themed, but we all kind of went in that direction anyway. So mm-hmm. I decided I wanted to do mittens because I think of the two colors, stranded mittens, as sort of quintessentially Norwegian. So it was pretty easy to pick mittens and settle on mittens. And then I started sort of trying them out and playing around with motifs. And I had this kind of four-pointed flower motif that I'd been working on when I was doing sketches and things, and sort of settled on that for the mittens. And the name Rosenhof comes from 2 summers ago. So I guess 2.5 years ago now, I spent the summer in Oslo at the International Summer School studying Norwegian. And Rosenhof was the part of Oslo I lived in when I was there for the summer school. That's my sort of Oslo connection. I spent the most time there. And then I went with the sort of untraditional choice for the yarn, even though the mittens themselves are rather traditional looking, because I chose this yarn made by a company called Telespin, which is a mohair wool blend. So it's about 80% mohair. So it's not brushed mohair, like when you think about fuzzy mohair sweaters, but sort of spun into a nice shiny yarn. And that is a little bit of a strange choice for traditional mittens, but Telespin is a micro spinnery, and they spin the yarn and dye the yarn on site with the fiber from their own Angora goats and their own sheep. So it's just a company whose philosophy and goals really line up with what I'm interested in. And I think I thought it was something that fit in really well with Oslo Knitting Festival, and Telespin did have a booth in the marketplace and all that. So yeah, I mean, they're just a pair of mittens, but there was a lot to pack in there, I guess.
Hey, they're not just a pair of mittens. You've just explained that. Yeah. I'm intrigued when you did say about mohair for color work. So is it the sort of the fiber, the halo of the mohair, does that lend itself to the stickiness that you need for color work a little bit?
Yeah, I think that it does, because it is, I mean, it is, when you look at the yarn, it is sort of shiny and smooth, but you do still have a little bit of that mohair halo. So it sticks in place quite well.
Awesome. Well, so you mentioned earlier about your school, I suppose, you're working on your master's in theoretical linguistics.
Which
sounds good fun. Yeah. So what do you find the links between that and your pattern writing and designing, and how do you get that balance?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think if you can find things that cross over between sort of knitting world and linguistics world when you sort of start to look into the basic building blocks. So I study language, and I specifically study kids who grow up with two languages and how they acquire their languages, basically. But when you look at you know, the syntax of a language and how it's put together. You have words, and then you have pieces of words that you can sort of shuffle up and combine to make different words, or, you know, you have, as a linguist, you would call it a morpheme, is like the most basic unit of meaning. So you can combine morphemes to make words, and then you can combine words to make sentences, and you, all these different combinations create different meanings, and you have incredible diversity in what you can create with these basic building blocks, and we see incredible diversity in the languages across the world, and I do see a similarity with knitting there, because you start with the very basic building block of a stitch, just one stitch, because a knit stitch is a purl stitch from the other side. So even if you have knits and purls, you flip the fabric over, and it's this, you know, it's the same thing. So you take this one basic stitch, and you can do all sorts of different things with, you know, combinations of the stitches to create things like cables and colorwork and all of these sort of complex fabrics and structures with one basic building block. And I think you can take that beyond just language and knitting, and look at, you know, biology or, you know, physics, and you start to see similar things as far as how we can conceptualize the world around us, I guess. Yeah, that's really cool.
Awesome. Well, speaking of knitting with a more traditional slant, your designs often do have a you know, like your Rosenhof-Rotter mittens, draw on traditional Scandi motifs and styles. So what's your interest in this style of knitting, and why do you find yourself drawn to it so often?
When I think back on it, I mean, I probably got interested in Norwegian knitting around the same time I got interested in the Norwegian language. And at that point, I wasn't knitting colorwork yet. But I was buying sort of ready-to-wear sweaters that had kind of Norwegian-ish motifs on them, you know. And I was always drawn to that. And I grew up in North Carolina, which has a very warm climate. And I hated the hot summers. So winter was my favorite season, because it was always this respite from the heat and the humidity. It finally cooled down a little bit. So I got really excited about, you know, sweater weather and all of this. And so that stuff just felt really cozy to me. But I think that as I started learning the Norwegian language and learning more about Norway, I got more interested in sort of traditional Norwegian knitting, and eventually started doing color work myself. And sort of when I finally got the hang of color work, it was like no looking back. And of course, now I live in Norway. So I think the two things sort of fed each other continuously. They probably continue to feed each other.
Awesome. Well, mentioning North Carolina, you're saying you grew up there and then you lived and worked in Seattle for a period. There's obviously, you know, like you said, a big change in cities and weathers and lifestyles. Has this changed your designs as well?
I think that it probably has. I think I've always sort of had a soft spot for sort of Scandinavian inspired designs, but I think the types of things I design has changed a little bit, just because each place that I've lived has changed my own wardrobe. You know, it's changed what I knit for myself, and the things I design are an extension of that. So I think that it has. You know, I moved to Seattle and suddenly I was thinking about my clothing in a much more practical way, because it's a very wet climate, and whether or not things are waterproof suddenly became much more important than they were in North Carolina. And wool is a really good thing in that climate too, because you have chilly, damp winters, you know, with lots and lots of drizzle, and maybe it snows once, maybe twice, but the city sort of shuts down and everyone freaks out. So mostly it's just, you know, kind of hanging out above freezing with cold, wet rain. And the wool is really good to you know, keep that at bay. And then that practicality has only increased since I moved to Tromsø, because the summers here are not very warm. I mean, it's the actual Arctic. That's how far north I am. So it's, you know, it's very cold in the winter. Fortunately for me, stranded color work is very practical here. I think that there is a tendency for where I'm living to affect my design.
Interesting. All right. One thing I wanted to talk about with your sort of, with a view to your where you're living affecting your design and your research is your recent blog posts all about Norwegian wools, which have been very interesting, especially after being at Oslo and now I'm reading them, having seen some of the yarns. Could you tell us a little bit more about your motivation behind that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so I have on my blog this series, sort of informal series, that is just called Norwegian Wool. And I think I've only done three posts so far, maybe. But each post sort of, I'm trying to make them more frequent, but each post sort of introduces to the reader a Norwegian yarn company that makes yarns using domestic wool. So I wanted to write about that because I'm really interested in the trend to, if you're not, I mean, not necessarily source local yarn. I think somewhere in the UK it's easier to say this is the local yarn. In the US, it's such a big country, so it's a little bit trickier. But even then, just sourcing domestic yarn and saying I'm supporting my country's, you know, sheep farming industry. I'm supporting my country's mill infrastructure because all of that stuff has spent so much of the last 50 years sort of at risk. A lot of places really did shut down. So, being in the US, I was really excited to see that process taking place. And that's one of the reasons I love working with Quinson Company. And I still love all of those yarns. But of course, now I live in Norway and I wanted to learn more about Norwegian wools and the sheep breeds that you could find here and which Norwegian yarn companies were actually, you know, making yarn from wool from Norwegian sheep. it was something that I wanted to learn more about myself, and I thought it only made sense to share that with others the more that I learn.
Exciting. All right. And what's your blog so people can check that out?
Yeah, my blog is called Paper Tiger. So the address is paper-tiger.net.
Cool. All right. Well, one question I wanted to ask. One of the interesting things is what I wanted to ask was your biggest challenge as a knitter.
Oh, yeah. I feel like one of my biggest challenges is just keeping my number of projects down. Like, I tend to have too many things, too many projects happening at the same time. The sort of people will refer to it as starditis, I think. You've got six works in progress, but you really get excited about something and you want to cast on for it anyway. That's working on curbing that habit is a challenge for me because it's definitely a habit I've had. Still always have like 10 or 12 works in progress at any one point in time. And so curbing that habit, that's a challenge.
What have you picked up any tips or what advice would you give for someone who has startitis?
Oh, I mean, I sort of think about this, like I think about how I'll feel when I finish one of the things I already have going. I mean, one of the other approaches is to look at something you're having trouble finishing. And this is something Karen Templer has written about recently, you know, that sort of like, if I can't find the motivation to pick this up, if there's seven other things I would rather be working on, how much do I really want this thing?
Mm.
You know, and in her case, I think that's leading her to frog a couple of things that she's realizing, like, this, I'm not excited about this. This is the wrong pattern for this yarn, or, you know, I like this pattern, but this is not the right, you know, there's some reason that it's just not working. I think being able to recognize that is really good and helpful.
Ah, very good. Well, another piece of advice I wanted to ask, which kind of, it's the linear time frame now kind of gets a bit shifted because we were newbies to Norway when we went to the festival. I was going to ask you tips, but maybe for next year, if people are thinking of heading to Norway and Oslo Festival, what hints would you give to someone who's thinking of making the trip over? Because, you know, I'm pretty certain they're going to do it a third year.
I think, I mean, my first tip for people, anyone traveling to Norway, is always get outside the city. Like, I love Oslo. I really love it. But the Norwegian nature is spectacular. So if you can find a way to get out of the city, and if you're only in Oslo for a couple of days, there are ways to do that nearby, and you don't need a car to do that. You know, you can, the metro up to, there's a lake called Sognsvann with it, and you can go running, or if it's summertime, you can go swimming in the lake, and, you know, it's just a way to get out into a lot of ways to do that, because the Norwegians love to spend time in nature. If you have more time, you can do something like taking the train to Bergen, which is like I think it's about a 6-hour train ride, and I haven't done it yet, but it's supposed to be really, really beautiful. You sort of go through the mountains as you travel west, and so yeah, definitely get outside the city, but also explore Norwegian yarns and wool. So if you're at the festival, that's a really fantastic way to do that, because you have the marketplace right there with all of these fantastic vendors, and
you've just done the research by reading the Paper Tiger blog, so
yeah, so you'll find a lot of those Norwegian wools there, and then also there's the Norwegian sort of hand dyer community is really starting to grow. I think there was maybe one or two dyers at the festival marketplace the first year, and this year there were so many more. There's sort of all sorts of new hand dyers, especially in Oslo, but in other parts of Norway as well. And I mean, there's a really lovely variety of different things that they're focusing on. You know, some of them are sort of doing the kind of merino sock bases that a lot of dyers do. Some of them are more focused on luxury bases. Some of them are focused on Norwegian wools. There's sort of something for everyone, which I think is really awesome.
Cool. I like that. Tips is like, get outside, but make sure you stay inside and knit and get some yarn.
Yes, you both. And then another way to do both is to visit the Folk Museum, which is one of my favorite places in all of Norway.
Nice.
The National Folk Museum in Oslo, because there are indoor exhibits, which are really fantastic. But then there's the open air museum, which is filled with buildings that have been brought in from all over the countryside. Literally, they've moved buildings to this site in Oslo, including a stave church, one of the old wooden stave churches. So I just think if you're a visitor to Norway, the Folk Museum is a really incredible experience.
Cool. All right. So, well, thanks for chatting to us. If people now know Paper Tigers, your blog, where else can they find out about your life and your wools and your languages that you do?
Well, I'm on both Instagram and Twitter as Cake and Vikings, and the Instagram is full of photos of whatever knitting I'm working on, and also lots of photos of Tromsø, where I live in northern Norway. So that's nice. I think that's the best spot to follow me, probably.
Fantastic. All right. Well, I hope people do. Thank you so much for talking to us, and I'm sure we'll cross paths again at some knitty event. Chat to you again there.
Wonderful. I can't wait.
All right. Well, take care. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye.
This episode of Pomcast is also sponsored by Green Mountain Spinnery. The Green Mountain Spinnery is a worker-owned cooperative located in southeastern Vermont. Since their founding in 1981, their goals have remained unchanged: to create yarns of the highest quality, to help sustain regional sheep farming, and to develop environmentally sound ways to process natural fibres. All the fibres they use, alpaca, mohair, wool, and organic cotton, are grown in the United States, and they make every effort to purchase directly from individual growers. Unlike most commercial mills, the spinnery uses no chemicals to bleach, moth-proof, or shrink-proof their yarns, and they're proud to be one of the only organic yarn manufacturers in the US. Thanks, Green Mountain!
Well, I think it bears repeating that we thank Diana for appearing on the podcast. All the way from Tromsø.
Yeah, wonderful. All right, so what would Juju do? What would she do? Let's find out. So this is a query sent to us by Heather. Well, welcome back to our lovely segment, What Would Juju Do? I'm here, of course, with who other than Juju. Hi, Juju.
Hi, Sophie.
So we've been sent a question from Heather O'Connell, a fellow Canadian. She's made it clear. So you know her, right?
Yeah,
So here's Heather's problem. Let's get straight down to the nitty, the literal nitty gritty.
Oh, right? Yeah. Juju? Yeah.
Here's her problem. She loves to knit menswear. It's her favourite thing. And given that the love of her life is quite tall and broad, she often looks out for socks as a way to gift him knitted goods without spending 5 years on a cardigan. He receives them graciously. That's good to know.
Yeah, we like a man that appreciates his knits.
But he has put me to the task of finding the stretchiest cuff possible. One that will not stretch out in an hour into wearing them, and one that will help his socks stay up, and one that is very stretchy. I have tried many things, so Juju, what would you do? Is there one special cast-on method? She personally loves the old Norwegian cast-on, but is this the best one? Should I use 1x1 rib, 2x2 rib? What about fancy rib? Help! In capital letters. So, God, Juju, just help this poor lady.
Hi, Heather. I presume you've already tried an old Norwegian cast-on on one of his socks, and what did he think? I would recommend Tilly Buddy's very stretchy cast on, which there's we'll put up a link to the YouTube video. Tilly Buddy lives here in London and she does some lovely things, and I think it's a fantastic cast on. I would also recommend one reference book that I really, really like. I just put the book on the table. I have a lot of knitting books, as I think maybe many of us do, but I really recommend that you get yourself one good book on casting on and binding off. And I'm referring to the 54 step-by-step methods by Leslie Ann Bester. We'll put a link on the website to that. I think it's really useful. You won't remember all the cast-offs and bind-offs that exist in the world. I do think it's good to have a few under your belt, but this is a really helpful reference book. So I think that's great. Also, have you tried putting some clear elastic shearing thread into the cast-on? That will make it even stretchier and snap-backier. I would recommend that you knit your significant person a few pairs of stretchy cuff-onlys. So maybe do a cuff that begins with Tilly Buddy's very stretchy cast-on. Do one that is just without elastic. Do one with elastic. And try the Norwegian cast-on. And get him to wear those sample cuffs around and see which one he likes best. They shouldn't take you, you know, more than an evening to do a few of those. And then you'll know what your go-to cast-on would be for him and his socks as you're going to be doing these regularly. That's what I'd recommend.
That's a good tip. And then you've got some like little attractive little ankle bands for around the house later.
Yeah, or sweat wristbands maybe. I don't know. Well, you could just, use a waist yarn to cast them off so that then you could pick up and carry on with the socks.
One thing I've never used the shearing elastic stuff, but mm-hmm. Is it right? Am I right in thinking you have to knit with it under tension? So you have to be stretching it while you knit with it?
Yeah. Yeah, you have to, not too much tension, but yes, it just as it's coming off the spool, it should be stretching as you work with it.
So would you have that sort of fixed in a project bag at your feet or something? What's the best way to work with that?
I don't think it would be necessary. I think it would just be under tension the way that you normally tension your yarn anyway is going to cause it to be under tension.
Oh, interesting. All right, I hope that's helpful to Heather. Thanks for getting in touch.
All the answers. I don't know why I don't just have her on speed dial for when I'm faffing up a jumper.
Oh, I do. You don't? It's just like a big picture of wool on my phone and I just press it.
With lots of like question marks. Yeah. We should make her a special What Would Juju Do graphic.
Yes.
Okay. Coming soon. And if you have a query, then well, now you know where to send it. You can send it to us, podcast@pompommag.com, and we will pitch it to the wonderful Juju. And you'll have to listen here to find out what she says.
Your career could be on the podcast. There you go.
Could indeed. So last but never least, top three. But this is special. Why? Why special?
Special because we're talking to Diana Waller and we have Katie, one of the organisers of Oslo Knitting Festival. Tona would be there, but she was poorly as well. She had a cold.
She did. They'd been working so very hard. Yeah. I was amazed that Katie was still standing. And we will have to say hello to Tona again via this medium instead.
You know what we should mention?
Mm.
I have to say, you know, we did the not top three, so not last episode, because we had a little short rose episode, which you can catch up on. Before that, we had our spooky special.
We did.
We have to say a big thank you to Eli for reading out the stories, because you guys, I think Eli, well, you know, we're done now. Eli's going to do the podcast.
Yeah, he's the new star of the show. And actually, I think we should bring him back, perhaps.
Yes.
So if you have anything that you think would be suitable for him to read, any problematic knits, horrifying sort of fibre situations.
Yeah, because, I think, you know, everyone's saying Eli did a good job. You guys did a good job because you sent in the funny stories.
We did, and we can't do that bit without you.
Yeah, we can't. So,
keep them coming.
Yeah. And then more giggles for all. That's all I'm campaigning for is more giggles and sillies for all.
But
anyway, back to this episode's top three.
Yep. So we did a little special here, as Sophie said, top three Norwegian style.
Yeah. So let's check it out. So for this section, the special Norwegian version of top three. We're in the bottom of the library in the basement, and I'm joined by Katie. Hello.
Hello.
Who's one of the wonderful organisers of Oslo Knitting Festival. And Diana's back. You heard her earlier in the podcast. She's
Hooray.
Here again.
Hi. Cast her away.
Yeah, as additional language and translation support.
Mm.
So for this top three, we thought top three useful knitting phrases in Norwegian. And we've been chatting to Katie already. I'm pretty excited because I think we've got more than three. So this is going to be like a general verbal exploration into this knitting
language. World of Norwegian knitting.
Yeah, thanks for joining us, Katie. Hi.
Thank you very much for having me. How exciting.
So I think maybe the first phrase I'd like to know is, where's the nearest yarn shop? Or, how do I get to the yarn shop? Or...
Yeah, that's a good one. What are the nærmest garn butik? A garn butik is a yarn shop. But then... we also have strikkebutik, which is just a knitting shop.
Like Strik Festival?
Exactly. It's nothing to do with streaking. No, take just making new ones. Nice. So that's quite a useful one. And then once you get there, you have kind of useful things like a nøste, which is a skein, or a hespe, which is a hank. Okay. And Norwegians tend to be quite strict about getting that one right, if you dare call a nøste a hespe.
So nøste
is a skein.
Skein.
Hespe.
Hespe, okay.
And interestingly, hespetre is a swift, but it's also kind of a name used a bit like how we say battle axe, you know, kind of like an old grumpy lady.
Oh, interesting.
It's also known as a hespetre in Norwegian.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
Yeah, there's so many.
And that's a hank tree.
Yeah.
Hank tree.
Yeah.
Good. I like the literal translations of things.
There's also with nothing to do with knitting, but you know when you... roll up like bales of hay on farms and they have those white things around them. They call them tractor eggs because it's from a tractor.
Oh, that's like so cute.
I think Norwegian loves compounds and it sort of never lost the art of the kenning, maybe.
Yeah. Refrigerator is a kjøleskapet, which literally means chilly shelf. but for knitting ones, I don't know, we also have really cute expressions like learning skarn, which is the yarn that you buy when you've just received your salary, and you go out straight to the yarn shop. And we have trøstenøste, which is when you need some comfort. Trøste is to kind of comfort, to consolidate, and then nøste is, of course, skein. So there's a lot on Instagram when people can't make it to fun festivals and stuff. They tend to go out and say that they bought some trøstenøste to comfort themselves at the local yarn store.
Yeah. Then there's Egostrik, because a lot of Norwegians knit for their kids or other people's kids or friends. They knit gifts a lot, I think. And Egostrik is like ego knitting. It's when you knit for yourself.
Oh, yeah. So it's kind of selfish knitting.
Yes. But it's kind of, it's more like pleasurable. It's more like, I've earned this. I've, like, I've deserved this. I'm going to treat myself.
Yeah.
What was that one again?
Egostrik.
Egostrik.
Yeah.
Nice. That's a good phrase. Yes.
Yeah. And can we think of any others? You also have, like, traditional Norwegian knits, like the kofta, which Diana's done some fantastic blogging about.
Yes, I'm still working. I'm almost finished with my kofta. So that's, like, a traditional sort of stranded colorwork cardigan. Yeah.
Tends to be steeked as well.
Yes. Yeah, both for the opening and at the sleeves, the armholes. Yeah.
Which I'm yet to try, but one day.
Okay. Excellent.
Mm-hmm. And we also have, like, botter, which is the kind of Norwegian, when you think of traditional Scandinavian mittens, they're quite kind of square with some. And Diana's also done an amazing job.
Great, you have this in this combo to reference.
Or if you're traveling in Norway and you realize you don't have the right needle size and you need to go to the store and tell them you need needles, that's a pinner.
Pinner, yeah.
Okay.
And they have about 5 different names for what we call DPNs. They're like armepinner, which is sleeve needles.
Yeah.
Or sokkepinner.
Sokkepinner.
Sock needles.
Settepinner, which is, I don't actually even know where that comes from. Like a set of needles, I guess. But it's always very confusing when you have customers coming in and asking for armepinner, settepinner, sokkepinner. It's like, it's all the same thing.
Is that mainly the length that they come in then? Or is that...
I think it's more... to do with, it's the same thing. It's the same DPNs. So like the ones that we sell at the store I work at are 20 centimeters. But I think it's more that they're so practical in their use of language. So they think, what do I use these needles for? Knitting sleeves. Mm-hmm. Therefore they are sleeve needles. Mm-hmm. Or if they knit more socks, then the sock needles.
Interesting. So and I have clocked a lot of DPNs on this trip. So I mean, it tends to be the favored style.
Yeah.
Yeah, I suppose there's less magic loop happening.
Yeah. Yeah. And we had two full workshops in Magic Loop at the festival this year because people just don't like Magic Loop. Tell me more.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Nice. All right. Any others that we need to know, do you think?
I guess like Diana was saying, the things of if you need to have the same dye bath in Farving Law. Or in Farvings Law. I'm still not quite sure.
Well, and I've seen with some yarns, I've seen maybe parti.
Parti nummer.
Parti nummer. It's that's like a batch number.
You know, I'm going to start saying that because I always struggle with like in Farvings
Law. But I've had the experience of going to a Norwegian yarn store and sort of saying, I have the same dye lot, and they don't know what that, you know, it's like, it's, there's not a good direct translation. So figuring out, party, that will give them the idea. It needs to be the
party
same
number.
Yeah. Party number. Yeah. Yeah. So that's a very practical one. I'm very practical over here.
Good. Well, I feel I have like emotional, my selfish knitting, my ego knitting. I have how to get my needles and my dye lots and how to get to the yarn shop.
Mm-hmm.
I just need to tell people that they're listening to the podcast. How am I going to say that?
They heard a poor. Podcast.
Podcasten. Yeah. Since I'm living in Tromsø, I'll do my dialect version, which would be Dokker. Dokker hører på. Podcast.
Yeah.
Dokker hører på. Podcast.
Yeah.
And what was the other one?
Dere hører på podcast. Eller du hører på podcast.
Du hører podcast.
Yeah. Eller podcasten.
Yeah.
Tusen takk.
Bare hyggelig.
So thank you. And was that you're welcome?
Yeah. Basically you're welcome.
Yeah.
Awesome. It means just nice. It's a little translation.
Thank you, guys. Thank you. Extra thanks to Katie for putting on such a wonderful festival.
Thank you so much for coming. We're completely honoured that you came and partied with us.
Well, we'll do it again next year.
Definitely.
Thanks again, Diana.
Thanks so much for having me.
Tack for us.
What's that again?
Tack for us.
Tack for us.
Like, thanks for us. Like, thanks for having us.
Happy New Soon. What would it be like? Bras stricken?
Goose stricken.
Goose stricken?
Goose stricken.
Goose stricken.
Well, thanks again to all our... We had many contributors this time. Contributors.
Voice, yeah.
So thanks to their voices.
It's like to outsource the podcast more and more.
Okay, and of course, thanks to you guys. And we look forward to hopefully seeing some of you at the Christmas party and bringing you another episode in time for Christmas as well.
See you soon.
We love you. Bye! Podcast is produced by Lydia Gluck and Sophie Scott, with lots of help from Eli Block, who created the original music for this show. For more Eli-related music, go to goodgirlandthebadtimes.com. Thanks as always to Megan, co-creator and editor of Pom Pom Quarterly. And thanks always goes to the lovely Amy and the wonderful Gail. Thanks to our interviewee, Diana Waller. And of course, a big thank you to all you Pom Pom buyers, subscribers and listeners. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe and why not leave a review? Send any feedback or ideas to podcast@pompommag.com. And don't forget to keep in touch with us via the podcast group on the Pom Pom Ravelry Forum.